In this week, in 2001, the Wimbledon FC owners angered the fans with a controversial proposal, to put it mildly, to move the club to another ground in Buckinghamshire. The BBC report on the 2nd of August said, those who did want to go will have to travel 21 stops on the tube, followed by around an hour on the train. Alternatively, as Mark Jones suggested in the BBC clip, we'll just start over again. We did. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Well, some of us are back. I'm in Greece, where the regulars are here. The man with the buttons, Dr. Adam Proctor. The saviour of football, my friend, Niall Cooper. And the face of the Oppos Fan podcast, it's tall Mark Lewis. Over to you, Mark. I'm off for a pina colada.
Well, thank you, Matthew. And good evening and welcome to the Same Old Wombles. This is probably something we can call officially the first episode of season five. I believe it's season five. Somebody can correct me. Lost track already. But yeah, as you can see, dear listener, I am not Matthew Cooper. I am indeed Mark Lewis. He's already done the intros for all of us. And that just shows that even though Matt is actually lying on a beach in Greece right now with his sangria or whatever alcohol of poison he's managed to find and avoiding any other way of actually checking out AFC Wimbledon games, he couldn't let it lie with a topical 90s reference. And so I did the reference and the intro for us. So there we go. It's Mark, it's Niall, and it's Adam, and we are Same Old Wombles, full steam ahead for the new season. I think we probably shouldn't do a season preview this week because Matt's not here. Is that fair, gentlemen?
I think there's one thing that we really, really need to cover this week. 25 years. 25 years I've been living next door to who the fuck is Charles.
Is that 25 years this week?
25 years this week.
Oh, my word. So, dear listener, the Same Old Wombles podcast in itself sort of in almost was born out of various random things, including the publication Yellow and Blue. So those of you who were fortunate or unfortunate enough, like most of us were, to endure that last season at Sellers Park, there was various fans boycotts called for. One of which was, let's boycott all merchandise, at which point everyone said, yeah, but we love the programme. So some blokes got together. It was just blokes, actually. I don't know why. We weren't excluding everybody, but initially it was like five or six guys and formed an idea of doing a programme. And out of that came various different things, including the fact that young Mr. Niall Cooper masqueraded as an editor of a magazine for some time.
It is very true. I think we'll do a proper reminiscence episode in a few couple of days' time or whatever. Because we've got a few people that we want to kind of bring back onto that. But I think for me, just remembering back to that letter when it dropped, because that's what happened on the 1st of August, we all got a letter from the chairman saying, wonderful, brilliant news, everybody. The most greatest thing has ever happened since sliced bread. We're all going to F off up to a town in Buckinghamshire and screw the lot of you. Basically, I might have paraphrased that letter a little bit, but that's basically what it was. And so I think, you know, this season is going to be one where I think it's really important that we reflect back on the history and the achievements of where we've got to. Because then 25 years ago, we had nothing. We were all heartbroken. You know, in the book that I wrote, there's a whole massive chapter with quotes from loads and loads of different people about what they remember. And I remember one of them was Dean Parsons when he wrote that when I heard the news, he was holding a vase work and just smashed it. And there are loads of other things. He just dropped it. Loads of people just didn't believe the news. You know, I'd had rumours from a mate that I was working with that this was happening, and I just never thought it was even remotely possible. So I think all of us can remember where we were. And I think the whole history of the club and the whole history of us being why we are, and also I have to say my Wombles, why we do, as Matt refers to it, we have PTSD about it, and why being fan-owned is so absolutely fundamental to us because of what happened 25 years ago. And I think it's really important that we remember, look back on that and remember exactly that that's why AFC Wimbledon exists as a club. That's what we're about. And it was horrors. So I'm interested to get like the memories of Adam and Mark when they heard the news of that, and, you know, and just kind of what the reactions. We will go back to do stuff on yellow and blue and all the rest of it, because there's a whole load of other stuff that's really about what we did. But it's just the memories and the horrors. I think everybody who's an AFC Wimbledon fan needs to kind of never forget.
I've probably still got that letter in my loft or somewhere. Do you know what I mean? I don't remember. I think I just remember being shocked and thinking, well, this isn't going to happen. But then I was also like, we need to protest against this straight. I mean, that was everyone said that straight away. I didn't know how horrible that was going to be. But it was kind of mad. It was just and so out of the blue, I had no idea that stuff was going on really until the letter came. And then it was just like, what the heck? You know? And I think I do remember because I lived nearer to that place at that time. I think I remember someone saying, well, it'd be quicker for you to get there. I was like, no, you don't get this. That is not the point. I didn't break anything, I don't think. I probably just, well, we wouldn't have had WhatsApp then, would we? But somehow we mobilised in some capacity, and I can't really remember how. Mainly on email, probably, to begin with. So, yeah. But that was,
Well, email was in its infancy, and so was the internet overall, I think. What is interesting for me is, and, you know, dear listener, if you're anything like a new listener, then you'll definitely already be well aware of the old bit of the same old one. Certainly in the reminiscing here, being very apparent here. But I think actually everything that we're going to talk about with regards to, you know, pre-season activity and where we're at in League One and everything else, everything actually stems back from what happened 25 years ago. I don't remember where I was when the letter came. They say that, I don't know whether or not our children's generation will say this, but certainly they used to say for my parents' generation and for our generation that you remember where you are when certain era-defining things happen. Now, for me, actually, there are only two things in my life that have happened. The letter wasn't one of them, but the actual decision itself overall in May was definitely one of those. And the other one, actually randomly, was when John Lennon was shot when I was only 10, December 1980. But when the actual decision thing came, and I got a text from a friend, a person I'd been helping out with, we'd all been part of the protest activity, and they just texted and said, hello, have you heard we've lost? And that's the fascinating thing, because that's exactly how we felt at the time. Adam's right. It was about when the letter came through, then you think we have to protest against this. We're not going to take this lying down. And thank goodness all the people were involved, as has most recently been covered again by Jonesy with an interview with the sponsor, with his jersey sponsor thing, which I'm not going to let lie because it's just grates with me. But thank goodness there were those people who actually had their plans and were getting themselves organised. Because I think we all felt low in different times and different reasons. And a lot of people who are not involved with football would say, why and how on earth would you feel low or be impacted emotionally by what happens with the football match? But that's what happens. Football grabs you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even sure if I had a season ticket at that point. I can't remember. But I was certainly galvanised to go to as many games as possible to protest the madness that was going on. I mean, I didn't realise that at the end of the season it would feel brutally horrendous. You know, some of the protests were just so brutal, demoralising, etc. And, you know, I mean, we could talk for ages. You know, the thing that always sticks with me, and this was later on, but it was the secret recording of Koppel talking to Plough Lane residents about why they wouldn't want football fans to walking down their street. It all blew my, you know, I just remember, and because there was some people who were like, no, it's going to be fine, you know, and it's like there was so much lying going on. It just blew my mind when I heard that. I was like, okay, this is it was a I don't know where I was when the letter came, to be honest, but it was just like,
the secrecy going on there was hilarious, because I was on the Wizard Committee at the time, and those people who are also with me on the Wizard Committee are still fans and so on, and the arrangements that we went to try and make sure that we weren't being boat, so to speak, whilst also then being able to get somebody into that meeting with Coppolis. All bizarre. Anyway, that in itself could, as Adam quite rightly says, take up a whole episode and more. And Niall's right, we're going to reminisce relating to Yellow and Blue and the actual activity we did then, get some voice notes from different people around, who are, some of whom are still following the Dons.
Damn it.
Voice notes for sure, just to completely keep Adam on his toes.
When we think about people involved in Yellow and Blue, there's probably about 20, so 20 different voice notes, probably all of different lengths and different sound qualities.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's our aim, really, to get all of that, because that would be really, really helpful. No, I mean, to go back to all of this, I mean, it was, for me, and I'll mention it when we do the proper Yellow and Blue stuff, I was not a football politician, but into football politics at all, right, until that letter landed. Yeah. So my personal journey over the last 25 years kick-started on the 1st of August 2021, when that 2001, when that letter dropped, because that was the moment where it's like, this is real. You know, I think what's so important is to think about what football actually should mean to so many different people and so many different clubs have all been through it. And until it happens to you, you don't know. And I think that's something that we should never lose as a club, because it's part of our DNA. And it's like Adam's got the T-shirt on with We Are the Resurrection written on it. And I think that for me is basically what it needs to be part of our DNA. It's so unique to us. And we should be seen as the kind of a club that's a beacon to so many other people. So I think that's where I think we are unequivocally pro being fan owned. And unequivocally pro that stuff. And that's because of what happened to us. And we should never, ever forget it. So that's kind of my little piece.
Once again, Charles Copley, you're responsible for lots of different things. But getting Niall Cooper involved in football politics, we can definitely add to that list of shame, frankly. And anyone who had those black
t-shirts. Shame.
I'd love to know whether or not the story of Charles Copley's ex-wife asking for one of those Charles Coupled Club Killer T-shirts, is that true or not? I'll have to see if mine's actually in the loft or in the shed or
something. I don't think I've got one of those.
Open to everybody. If you want to send a voice note or anything you're kind of reminiscent about that first season, let us know. Drop a note on the both of social media feeds that you're hearing this on. And just let us know, and then we can compile something together. So I think it's so important to mark it. And we will mark it on the actual first Yellow and Blue landing on the 25th of August. So that's when, we'll get something out for then. So that's a massive thing. And there's so many people that were involved. I could do a nice segue here onto FIFA about how completely screwed.
Too early. I want to actually talk about our football before you talk about FIFA.
All right, okay.
Otherwise, we will lose the whole of the rest of the episode, dear listener. And we'll also lose all of the three listeners we already have actually.
Fair enough, right. There's a word of warning to you all. There'll be a boring bit about Niall ranting about FIFA.
We have to split the politics up with the actual football.
Turn off.
Absolutely.
So you can listen into that, and I will rant about FIFA later on. But
Before that, however, we have to talk about some football. So as we record on Monday night, we have the season opening, otherwise known as Meet the Manager, and Meet Everybody Else, including members of Wowzer, and I believe the women's team will be there, as well as DLAG, as well as the Foundation, as well as the Don's Trust. So that's all happening Tuesday evening, probably the same day as you listen to this, or possibly it's already happened, depending on when Adam has a chance to get this episode out. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of questions will be asked at that thing, because I've been fortunate enough to go to two preseason games. I saw the Charlton game and I saw the QPR game. Certainly noticeable, having seen previous preseason games with QPR, they were three or four steps up from Charlton in terms of their attitude, in terms of their engagement, and in terms of, therefore, how difficult we found it, frankly. But what I think is actually particularly impressive, just to start with, the crowd. You just see how big the crowd was? Only a preseason game, so it doesn't really matter, but obviously it's revenue for us, right? So fair play. QPR bought over 1,000 or so of their own fans and a few more that were sitting in the home stand behind us in the camper stand. But the crowd was 4,200. That's the kind of size of crowd that we were getting maxing out King's Meadow. So we don't obviously need any reasons or any more justification why moving to Plough Lane and being in Plough Lane in such a stadium is a really sensible move commercially and viably and everything else. However, the fact that we've been able to get that kind of crowd for a pre-season game, A, indicates, you know, we're getting some decent opposition to play against, which tests the team and tests the coaching members' abilities, but also the fact that the fans are still on board. You know, we haven't made a huge amount of signings. We talked about signings this time last week. We can talk about the same amount of signings now, because since last week, we've signed one player who is an 18-year-old, I think he's 19 this coming weekend, from Chelsea. And we signed him as a midfielder.
Mark, I have to say, he has, of course, obviously filled the urgent gap that we had in centre midfield, because we were really short in centre midfield. So we hardly had any players covering that position. So I think we were all delighted when we got that player through and going, well, that's obviously what we need, because, you know, I think no team can go into a new season without eight centre midfield players on your books. And it's really good that we've got that. And we don't really need any new forwards or centre-backs or any other positions where we have no cover at all. I think that's completely irrelevant, is it? I mean, like, I'll say all that. Obviously, the reputation he comes at is quite good, and he's probably a nice capture. But my God, we've got to shift some centre midfield players pretty soon. We don't need them all.
I mean, amongst other things, one of the things that clearly says to me is, first of all, I'm not sure however much of a polite interview he did after the game on Saturday. I don't really see how significant a position Jake Reeves is going to have this season, because, and also at the same time, it clearly shows to me he's wedded to 3-5-2 once again. Because if you are playing 3-5-2, then you do need a number of midfield players. You don't need eight, but you certainly need a choice.
Yeah. Well, there we go. We'll see what happens. I mean,
I totally agree with Mark. I mean, it's just like, you know, we don't need that many. I mean, it gets to a point where you're thinking, are we going to play a flat five? And nobody ever plays a flat five with no wingers, because we've got enough to do it. It's like, you know, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. But, you know, trust the process. I'm sure that's what people used to say.
Well, trust the process, and also trust the fact that, or you guessed, we have to trust the fact that we know we need to box clever in the transfer market, which involves getting loans and different types of loans in. Somebody I saw commented why we didn't get the tall, rangy striker. Again, it's another 18-year-old who we had in our academy team, who Wolves bought from our academy team and have never actually loaned out anywhere. And he's gone to Colchester. And I thought, well, hang on, he's never been on loan anywhere. And then, of course, we loaned somebody in from Chelsea who's never been on loan anywhere. And poor lad, the new guy, Harrison, he obviously comes, unfortunately, with the legacy of the fact that the last loanee from Chelsea was, anyone remember? Such a memorable
player. Wasn't that guy that just appeared once and then we never saw again?
Absolutely right.
I think a pre-season.
Brody Hughes apparently allegedly was his name. But
yeah, I think I saw him. We did see him once. I think maybe that was at a pre-season game and then never saw him again.
I think he actually played in one of the, you know.
Oh, he did, yes, in the trophy, one of the trophy things.
Yeah. But you would hope to see that him coming in is not a sign that somebody else is going to be going out. At least one of the established midfield players is going out, because we need some experience. Which again links me to, we need strikers. We still need strikers. There are rumours going around at the weekend about a certain Port Vale striker that we might be signing.
No. You heard of that one? Who was giving out these rumours?
I saw the rumour, but then I'm not going to comment on rumours, considering the last Say My Wombles podcast, I was all completely convinced we were going to sign Kanu. I've listened back, and I have to apologise to everybody who listened to that, because I was so convinced. I was so sold. I've got to say, it's because another podcast made it sound like it was an inevitability. So just to say, on that other podcast, some of the rumours that they come out with, have to be, honestly, they're complete and utter bollocks, aren't they?
I'm the same thing.
Like, that's where I'm at. So there you go. I'm like...
If Charlton think, A, that they will only loan out, sorry, they will only sell Connor, they won't loan him out, and B, that they can sell him for £1 million, and C, the best way of showing his abilities and the fact he's worth £1 million is by not playing him for a single minute of any pre-season friendly, then that, frankly, is slightly delusional. But Charlton seemed to be, after losing to us and losing 3-0 at home to Reading on Saturday in another pre-season friendly, falling over themselves to slit their throat, as they say. However, just going back to our game, so we played QPR, and QPR played a reasonable team. After they beat Bromley at 7-0 on Friday night, I was a little concerned, especially as their two main strikers didn't play against Bromley, but they played against us. But they just looked a cut above. I think Nelson, who I'm going to call Curtis all season, because Curtis Nelson is a much more experienced player, and Zach Nelson is the one that we have played for us. As my daughter said to me after half an hour, who do you keep calling Curtis? We've got no players called Curtis. Ronan Curtis left a couple of years ago. Anyway, Zach Nelson was about the only midfield player we had that was just about trying to keep pace with their midfield. But other than that, for the first half an hour at least, they were cutting us open. So far, we only had McDonald to be able to play pre-season because apparently Bishop is injured, but is going to be fit for this season, but and therefore is going to be fit for this weekend. Except he's played no games all season. So you've got to say that McDonald will have to play initially. But frankly, considering how many saves he made against Charlton, and he probably made 7 or 8. I mean, you guys can check because I was updating from the game. But I would estimate he made 7 or 8 saves. And even right at the end, after we got it back to 2-2, he pushed a long-range shot onto the post, at which point our defence just stopped. And the guy who'd actually put the shot in himself from 25, 30 yards was able to get to the rebound and bundle it in. But 3-2, I know what you said. What did you say, Adam, on the WhatsApp? That you thought that we'd done well?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we should have been 2-2 is what I said, because I thought that third goal was just, you know, he saved it effectively. It just a really lucky rebound. Okay, maybe the defenders weren't moving, but I thought we deserved to have 2-2. So that was why. I mean, I thought it was a good game.
It was a decent game for a pre-season game, but actually to throw another topical reference in, if we'd drawn that game, let alone even possibly sneaked it, because Sasu, as we'll come on to, had a wonderful 20 minutes or so, and could have had a hat-trick, actually. But if we had sneaked it, or even got a draw, it would have been the biggest miscarriage of justice since...
No, it wouldn't, because we would have drawn. Mark?
I can think of loads of miscarriage of justice both ways. Right, so
we never want
a pre-season friendly against the Championship side. Where no, not it's not the biggest miscarriage of justice. I mean, come on. What I was interested to know, because I know you were near some QPR fans and you've had some feedback or whatever about that.
Yes,
was what was the difference in strength between the team that tonked Bromley 7-0 and the team that we lost 3-2? Because that for me is quite a big barometer. Because if you're right, the two main strikers were missing. Because that was the Friday night, and then we played, you know, whatever, it was the day after that we played QPR. So what I'm interested about is the difference between the strengths of those two, Mark.
So they said that apparently there were 6 or 7 of their main first team, including their two main strikers, that played against us. And actually, the kid that scored the second goal with his first touch after coming on was a 15 or 16-year-old. So their bench was relatively light playing against us. But actually, the defenders were 2 or 3 of their main first choice, including Ronnie Edwards, who they signed for a lot of money from Peterborough at the beginning of last season. So actually, it wasn't the case, as Matt claimed from his Sun Lounger in Greece, that they just bought a bunch of kids, and therefore we'd actually just had an easy ride. If you look at that first goal, and I know we're going to dine out on this quite a lot until he scores a goal in the league, but you look at the first goal, Smudge wins the ball straightforwardly in midfield, plays a really simple ball along the line, but he's right tight to the far touchline. And Sasu absolutely burns his man. You know, if there'd been a full crowd there with it was only the Kappa that was open, and it was the opposite side where he made the run. But, you know, the crowd would have been absolutely on his feet. He burned his man, and then he came towards goal. And I was sitting where you guys normally sit, in that corner above the corner on the right-hand side of the cap stand. And you're thinking, the only thing he can do is curl the ball around the keeper into the far corner. But he's not going. Oh my word, he's just done that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of an angle, wasn't it? I was like, no way, and I was like, wow, okay, he can do that kind of stuff.
And 2 minutes later, as I'm in the process of just being flabbergasted and messaging you guys 2-1, you then had another attempt. Only the seconds save the keeper had to make. And then for a good, as I say, 15, 20 minutes or so, it was like, oh my word. We're actually remembering that if we press high and work at a team, not just competing with one or two men in midfield, we'll have an opportunity. At which point, Seddon swings the ball in. Sasu goes for the ball like an old Brickshell centre forward should do, being going for a header whereby he's probably 40-60 to lose the ball and get smacked in the face by the goalkeeper, wins the header and loops the header into the net. And then the guy, the QPR fan behind me, starts bitching about the fact that he's their reserve keeper who only cost 800 grand.
Only.
So I very quickly pointed out to him that 800 grand is far more than we spent on all of our squad put together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that when you see these little inklings, I think we all knew Sasu has a little bit of talent, but he's never been played as a forward, really. So it's like, you know, interesting to see what's going to happen there. And, you know, I mean, look, we've got to think there are a few actually quite exciting players we've got. So Sasu fits into that, Nkeng fits into that, and I'd probably throw Tilly in there, and Brown's capable of doing occasional amazing things, right? So there are a few players that can do the unpredictable, and actually for us we need to have that, because when we had loads of injuries and we were just predictable and slow, we were getting torn apart, right? And that's where I think we need to have those four available to us, because that makes a difference. So it's weird because we've not, compared to the end of last season, which was bad, but we were so hit by injuries, that now we've got a squad that is like, it's not weaker than what we had last season, in my opinion. And, you know, and remember that the reason why we ended so badly is because we had so many injuries. So if you talk about a fully fit Wimbledon team with that squad level, then it's not bad. You know, we're still looking to add one or two. Sorry.
I would like to add a lot more than one or two. I mean, run it down, because it was put on social media. Here's your squad depth right now. In goal, Bishop or McDonald. Wing back, left-hand side, Seddon or Nkeng. And there's a separate conversation to have about Nkeng. But he is, at the moment, your left wing back cover. Right wing back. I know he shouldn't be, but he is. Let's be honest about this, right? Centre back, obviously, is where your gaping holes are, because you have Johnson, Sweeney and Ogundere, and you have no one else. So if Ogs goes down, Sweeney goes down, Johnson goes down, you've got no one else. Midfield is where you have all the options. So holding midfield, you have Smith or Harrison or Reeves. Then you've got Maycock or Nelson on one side, Hippolyte, Jennings or McCoy-Splatt the other side. McCoy-Splatt, I thought, was the best player against Charlton. Didn't get a kick against QPR at all. So who knows what the pecking order is there. And then up front, Brown or Hackford, Stevens or Sassy. Now, Stevens is long-term injury with a hamstring, which is a similar injury to what he had. I think we genuinely have to think about, I don't know, absolutely not in the know whatsoever, but I suspect if we see him fit and firing before Christmas, then we'll be fortunate, which is awful to say. And the look on Niall's face, dear listener, clearly indicates how frustrating that would be. But that's why you need probably two more forwards. Again, if we were to get Jaden Stockley from Port Vale, who allegedly was at the game on Saturday, allegedly, then he did play with Hackford, and he is a unit. Yes, he's 32, 33, but that type of striker, someone else can do the running for him, and King does the running for him, Hackford does the running for him, Sasu does the running for him, and B, we're playing Sasu up front, and you can either alternate Sasu and Stockley, or you can actually say to Stockley, look, train these guys, and say to them, look, learn from him. Mm. You know, you could say he's a journeyman, but you look at his record, basically, he's a stronger version, more consistent version over many, many years in League One and League Two of Omar. And we've been crying out on virtually every single podcast for the last, I don't know, 2.5 years to have a different version or an updated version, obviously, of Omar.
So now what you've done is you've kind of absolutely massively upset Adam. Where I'm after is the version that's between the Omar and Akinfenwa. It's that mix of a play. You know, that's what you want. You want that kind of, like, Akinfenwa was just impossible to get off the ball. And he was just that sort of person that is just so unique. That's the player I want as a mix. And when you talk about that centre-backs, that is a massive worry. Because what you're doing there is you're actually saying, like, well, out of our 8 billion midfielders, which one of those could actually operate as a centre-back? And I think we haven't really got one. You know, you could say, would Reeves do it? Would Smith do it? And I think the answer is they are, like, you lose 70% of that player by them playing at centre-back, and they're not good enough. So I think we've got a real problem there. And remember that what destroyed us at the end of last season was we had three or four centre-backs out. You know, and it was just, it was impossible for us. And when you had, like, God, I can't even remember his name now, the person who had the heart attack, being like having to be choice. Yeah, having to be a first choice. Obviously a legend the year before, but was a complete shadow of a player after that. And when you think that he was the person we had to rely on, oh my God. So we can't be in that situation again. We need to have a proper backup there because we were torn apart because of those injuries. And when I know Adam talks about the lack of depth in the squad, and it's like, you know, are any of our youth players even going to be remotely capable of stepping up to cover that centre back place? Maybe one, I don't know, Mark, but that's where I think we've got a real problem. So in those two places, we definitely need to add, and we've literally got 10 days to do it before the first league game of the season.
I'd like to say the Horan is, but again, he didn't get a look in on Saturday either. And last week, Matt said that, and I scoffed when he said this, that the wheels down game would be harder. But actually, we clearly, in terms of the squad situation right now, had to protect the bulk of the existing strongest starting 11 by resting them for most of the wheels down game. And by doing so, we showed, unfortunately, that we really don't have very much. And then we did bring on, you know, some of them on with the last 20, 25 minutes or so. But what frustrates the hell out of me is we still haven't worked out, because we're wedded to 3-5-2 or however that looks, is the best way of getting the most out of those attacking players you talked about. I mean, Nkeng came on Saturday for the last 15, 20 minutes or so, played very solidly, but was part of a back five rather than the back three because we were at that point trying to protect the 2-2. And didn't really get forward at all. And that's an absolute waste. He's not a solid right back. He's an attacking midfielder.
This is where the problem with Nkeng is Nkeng is not a player for a 5-3-2 unless you have him as like a kind of spare one of the two, like literally a free roll. I've talked about this before. Because if you had Nkeng, was able to say, Nkeng, you're on the pitch, you're a luxury player, just go and do crazy shit wherever you get the ball. That would be an absolute, as a defender, would be an absolute arse to mark because the guy is completely fucking talented. You just need to get the ball to him in dangerous places because he can just do things that nobody else in our team could do. What you can't do is rely on the guy to defend because he's bloody useless defending. And that's the issue. You know, we're not a team that is going to be having that ability to have that luxury in a lot of places, unless you're going to gamble, unless you're going to say, right, well, look, we're going to play against this. You can go and pressure us all you want, but at one point it's going to get to Nkeng and Nkeng's going to rip you apart up front. That's where I'm with it. And I can't think of a system with the players that we've got that allows us to do that. And we all love Nkeng. He's obviously a completely talented player and we love to see him. He's entertaining. He's one of those people you'd pay to go and watch. But for us as a team, how do we have the luxury? How can we have the luxury of playing him? That's why I find difficult. You know, and also that's why I'm not, you know, I'm kind of coming onto the Thomas Tuchel way of managing, in which case, like, you know, is attack the best point of defence? You know, just be completely, go for it. I don't know, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hoping there's some youth players. Annoyingly, I don't know whether it's last week or this week, when it was, our under-18s played Southampton's under-18s at Totten, which is really, well, near my house. I could easily get there. Well, I missed the game. I didn't know about it. So it was really under-advertised. I think it was a draw. Can't even remember. But I would have liked to have seen those players because I saw some last year in Eastleigh and they look good, you know. So maybe we've got a couple of youth players that might be able to jump in later on in the season if we have injuries. I mean, we're running out of time to get someone, aren't we? You know.
Well, I mean, the youth players we've got that either signed contracts or have shown some promise, or at least are training with the first team, would be Jovanovic and Horn, the centre-backs. And then you've got Kirby, who's an attacking midfield player, and Goma, who I think is a left-sided centre-back. Those latter two, unfortunately, it would appear, got injured in pre-season. I say it would appear because no one knows that. Nothing mentioned, nothing featured anywhere. Only just dropped into conversation by Jake Reeves, who, if you ever met Jake Reeves, is the kind of person that would just drop in something into conversation without caring whether or not that actually lumbers somebody or lands somebody elsewhere in the club in the shtuck, because he's a bit of a shithouse like that. But yeah, they haven't had an opportunity yet. Will they go out on loan? Quite possibly. Harry Sibwell's out on loan, but again, he's not the central midfield player, so we don't need a ninth central midfield player. So maybe it's making more sense now as to why he was loaned to Eastleigh straight away. As curious as that one sounds. Thinking ahead a little bit, which I know that Matt loves to do, which is why we're going to do it, because he's not here. We actually have a season opening game on a Saturday on Niall's birthday, dearly beloved. The interesting thing about it is when the draw came
which
out...
Which means thought, very, very, very important to say, right, I am there, I'll be there with my daughter, and I'm not a big alcoholic drinker, but if you want to buy me any of the food from any of the outlets, if you want to buy me any Sprite, lemonade, orange juice, anything like that, I'll just come up and say happy birthday, all for that, very pro. If you want to buy me any AFC Wimbledon merch, lovely, do that, all those sort of things. It is my birthday. It's rare that I get to go to my birthday, as you all know. Normally I missed my birthday game because I'm off somewhere, but actually this time I'm actually going to be there. Mark's shaking his head because he's obviously thinking, oh my God, I don't know what to get Niall on his birthday, but there you go. So
I was thinking, actually, can we arrange some custard pies, because that might actually get some takers.
If you're buying those nice custard tarts, the Portuguese ones, I do really like them, actually, Mark.
No,
I don't know if they sell them at the grounds.
We're talking about custard pies to slam in your face.
No, clearly you're talking about the lovely Portuguese custard tarts. They are lovely, so I'll have them as well.
They're about as small as the glass lenses that all of us are sporting right now. But no, the interesting thing was we're playing Newport County, who were one of the two or three teams, including Crawley, who just about stayed up last season. And actually, I was trying to do a bit of research just to understand who they are, what their threats are, or whatever. And all I managed to find out about them is they haven't had a manager all pre-season, because their manager left at the end of last season, obviously thinking that keeping them up another season is really too much of a cross to bear. And they just appointed a new manager, Hayden Mullins, who apparently was in the Fulham under-21s coaching setup until last week. So this is a brand new rookie manager. They're playing AS Roma, that well-known team, to be able to balance up against Newport in a pre-season friendly Tuesday night before, when we're obviously doing the meet the manager thing. And then they're playing us, obviously, first game of the season. And they're already basically looking at it thinking, we don't know where our goals are going to come from. We think it's going to be a relegation fight. And they appear in the pre-season previews in magazines and websites and blogs and so on to have been given exactly as much chance as we have in League Two, as opposed to League One. In other words, all the inverted commas experts think they're going to finish bottom and by some long, long distance. And actually, unlike the bolshiness that Wimbledon fans would come up with, it seems that their fans agree as well, unfortunately. So that's probably setting us up for loads of more custom pies that I've just referenced. We don't actually set our stall out correctly.
I would say that, though, to be honest, compared to last season with the predictions, I think we're predicted to finish slightly better than last season, which is 23rd rather than 24th generally.
Oh, really?
But it's pretty bleak.
And we're predicted to finish above Burton, actually, which is, everyone seems to think that Bromley, maybe these predictions were written before Bromley's defence managed to let in 7 goals to QPR reserves. But I'm wondering whether or not Bromley actually will be a bit of a flash in the pan, and whether or not Stevenage will be quite as prominent as they were last season. But we'll do previews next week, because that's previews of the league as opposed to anything else. I would like to hope we play our strongest team. Our strongest team right now involves Sasu and Brown up front. Now, Brown is as mercurial as ever. In both preseason games I've watched, he has looked for 99.5% of the time like he frankly was not interested in being there. But for the 0.1%, as we know, he will do amazing. And doing that well, he will, you would hope, against the likes of Newport at the very least, be able to see us through. And what I'd like to also see is Aaron Sasu in a meaningful game, because we know preseason wasn't meaningful, and we know that the Pizza Trophy against Cardiff wasn't meaningful either. If Aaron Sasu can actually score a goal at home in a meaningful game, then the blog that Mick Dore has put on today, Mick Dore obviously being Aaron Sassi's number one fan, I think Mick Dore's actually a bigger fan of Aaron Sasu than even Adam was of Omar Bogle, frankly. And that's saying something. But that will be well worthwhile. So, looking forward to that. Are you going to drag yourself along, Mr. Adam, or have you got a better offer?
I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet. I'm just trying to take some leave. So that might mean doing nothing, or that might mean coming to Wimbledon. I haven't decided.
But we also want to have your report from abroad, our foreign correspondent in India, when you're trying to follow games there.
It should just work, I hope.
What's the time difference? About 5 hours?
It's 5 hours ahead. So I don't quite know. I haven't booked my flights yet, so I don't exactly know what's going to happen. But yeah, in theory, if I fly Sunday after the 22nd game, then I should be able to do podcast on Monday, in theory.
All of the answers and the excuses that to listen to fans come up with for missing games, Adam's going to India, and apparently it's for work.
It is for work. We got a university out there. The University of Southampton has a campus there, and I've got to go and help.
I managed to feature on the interview with John Scales last season, from a hotel room in Zurich. So if I can do that, then I'm sure you can do something from India.
We've got to, surely, yeah.
Dear.
Well, it'll be fine. Now, come on, we've got to let Niall rant about FIFA before he has to go.
Mr. Niall is on a tight schedule today, but we have to give him his last little bit to be able to do a bit of football politics and tell us who his new candidate is to replace Mr. Infantino.
Oh, it's Lise from Norway, the Norway FA person, who those of you have heard is basically saying, lo and behold, that we need to completely reform FIFA. We need to get rid of all the corruption. And we need to look at all the kind of things that I care about, like human rights, environment, all that lovely woke stuff that I think is really important for football. And we also need to look at the fan experience, all the kind of stuff that Infantino has been a complete idiot about. So I've been doing my little television and radio bits over the last few days on this. I've been on BBC and Times Radio and TalkSport and all those sort of things talking about it. So the reason why I was the connection for it, obviously, I would never have been in this if it wasn't for Charles Koppel and the 1st of August 2001. I would never have been in that space. I'd never been in a situation where I've got people from FIFA and other organisations, like the Norwegian FA and other people like that, all kind of following and responding to what I've done. So, you know, for Charles Koppel's sake, thank you for that, because basically it's given me a bit of chance to look about it. But it is also, going back to it, we're about a different future of football. That's what AFC Wimbledon was created about, and that's what we were trying to do. And FIFA have been taking football in a completely the wrong direction. So there is a connection. We should be speaking out about the kind of nonsense that FIFA have been up to, the over-commercialisation, they're taking the piss out of fans, all the rest of it, because that's what happened to us. So I think, you know, if there's a club, if there's a set of supporters that should be bothered about the direction that FIFA is taking the game, is it's us. So I think, and also, we know the kind of people that should be the right people to take it forward and reshape it. So for me, yeah, it's personal, but it's also Wimbledon. And I think that's the connection I wanted to really make. That's the bit I wanted to say, right, that we've got to look at make a stand against some of the numpties in football. We've done it, we will continue to do it, and you know, same old Wimbles is a place for that, and I think Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon, is also the place for that. So that for me is what's so important. So yeah, let's get rid of Infantino, let's get Lise in from Norway, let's change the world of football. We've got form, guys. Did it with the regulator, did it with AFC Wimbledon. Let's take on FIFA. I'm up for it.
It's great, Noel. I think it's amazing. It's kind of the timing of this as well. We've always thought FIFA are a nightmare, right? But then I've had friends who are not really football fans, but they obviously followed the World Cup. right? They saw a lot of stuff going on in the World Cup and were like, this doesn't seem right. You know, it was very weird. And of course, then this announcement, and they were messaging me saying, well, this guy's got to go. What's he doing trying to sell the World Cup? And they're not football fans. They're fans who follow the big tournaments, right? Or they enjoy the spectacle. And yet they have completely got on side. And I think some of those are just conversations because of, yeah, the fact I'm a Wimbledon fan, and they know that there's more to it than just kicking the ball. And so they see it and they look at that stuff. What a roller coaster of a week. We get random messages of people going, what's going on with FIFA? I'm like, they're a nightmare. And then it's like, no, now it's all changed. So it sounds like he's gone. I mean, it sounds like he's like, because Wales have already said they don't back him anymore. I think so they're waiting for more.
England will do. Norway will do. There'll be a load of European nations that will do in the next few days. You know, and it will be that withdrawing support. And once you've started losing some of the bigger nations, and Wales are significant because of their historical role in FIFA and UEFA, right? So they are actually significant because of that. So you start looking at, there is a political movement that's going against it. And it's like, I think we should do all we can to back that revolution. Yeah, let's get rid of FIFA. Let's get rid of all those kind of idiots that have been doing all of that, and get a better thing in, get a better way of football, how football should run. We know it needs to change. And I think we've got form being able to lead that way. And I think we should continue to do that. I'm not saying that, you know, AFC Wimbledon should put a statement out, but I think fans of Wimbledon definitely could, and definitely, or, you know, kind of start saying, right, well, let's do something different, because we should. But that's me. I'm wrapping up. I won't talk any more politics. If you want to talk to me about politics, find me on Saturday. I will be there. It'll be my birthday, you know, endorse all of that sort of stuff. That's after you've bought me. And I particularly like the Greek wrap, you know, and pizza maybe. And if they're doing any of that German food as well, whatever, all of that, we'll have for it.
Custard pies, dear listener. Custard pies is what I'm telling you. Okay.
Little Portuguese ones. That's where we're at.
Large ones. Large ones, like the cartoons, so that we can smash them into Niall's place.
More little Portuguese tarts.
Not that I'm endorsing any kind of violence whatsoever in the name of me or in the name of the Sombor Walls or by any means.
I'll even take one of the pies from the upstairs bit as well. They're fine too. Chicken porty pie. Who doesn't like a chicken porty pie?
Well, I'll be at the game. I'll be at the preseason meet the manager thing tomorrow. I'll be interested in seeing which players we apparently are going to actually have there as part of the thing, and whether or not they get put off if there are any new signings straight away by the kind of random people that turn up on random questions they get asked. Like, I know we've signed you as a centre forward, but can you play left wing back? Type thing.
Yeah.
We'll report back on that next week. Hopefully, reporting back obviously on the League Cup success, in inverted commas, because we know that the League Cup has been good to us in recent years financially with regards to the games we had at Chelsea and we had at Newcastle. So the game against Newport is significant, is important, and a comfortable win would be a great and a sensible way to start the season. So with that, we'll round off.
I would take a little W in the column next to our name. That's all I'd take. Correct. It doesn't have to be comfortable, just has to be a win.
We'll have it on penalties if we absolutely have to as well, because McDonald's started the season quite well in that regard as well. So with that, on that wonderful note, I'll say thank you to Mr. Niall Cooper. He can go off and do his football politics elsewhere. Thank you to Mr. Resurrection, Adam Proctor. And thank you to the man who's not even here, lying on the beach with his sangria. Matt Cooper will be back next week. I'm Mark Lewis. We are the Sombor Wombles. And indeed, with season 5, we are back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth.